Our next guest is Richard McLean Smith. His book, Unexplained, is based on one of the most successful paranormal podcasts ever. Over 5.5 million streams and downloads to date. Fascinating, this one. Delighted to welcome Richard to the show. Good morning, sir.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good. Now, I've always been interested in the paranormal. I think that's kind of where your interest started here. But what you did about it was rather different to what I did about it. So how did you get involved in all of this then?
As a young kid, I was always sort of interested in strange and weird stories. I guess just as a way to kind of punctuate what I thought was, you know, quite a normal upbringing. But then as I got older, I kind of got also quite interested in the sort of notion that things aren't always what they seem. Yeah. There's kind of and I don't mean this necessarily as a paranormal or supernatural thing, but just literally, you know, we see the world as we have evolved to see it, not as it actually sort of is. And then on top of that, you get to sort of the ideas of different social kind of constructions and prejudices that we live in. And in a way, you end up with this very kind of murky impression of what reality is. And so I always found these kind of stories as a great kind of expression of that sort of uncertainty of, you know, what we think we know and what we don't know, what's still out there to discover.
And quite interestingly, like me, were a musician. Perhaps yes. All musicians are interested in the paranormal.
Oh, yes, there's a Julian Cope. I don't know if you know.
Yeah,
Julian.
I know very well. Yeah,
exactly. As a very sort of well-known sort of, he's called, what does he call himself? The I can't remember now. The antiquarian, but anyway, he's sort of renowned for being interested in quite esoteric subjects.
Oh, well, that's interesting, because I once on my Radio Clyde show back in Glasgow years and years ago, Julian Cope spent the entire 2 hours of a record review program sitting in the corner of the studio with his hands over his head, refusing to say a word. So I guess he was possessed at that point then.
I think so, yeah, possessed by an ego.
So how did you get from the interest then to, I believe you just kind of walked into a charity shop, had this idea, and then got the name of the podcast?
Yeah, it's a true story. It's a kind of, I guess, a strange coincidence in itself, but I'd sort of been fumbling around with, I'm an aspiring writer, and I was trying to figure out, you know, what to do and how best to apply some ideas that I was having. And I realized that, you know, having been a musician and I can produce and record myself, I thought the podcast is the perfect sort of medium to do it, where I could have kind of full control. And at first I just thought, I had this idea about trying to write these sort of based on true story mysteries, and create something that had sort of its own atmosphere and a tone and all that sort of stuff. So that was kind of the first idea. And then I found a story that sort of was perfect, which is about a woman that went to an island off the coast of Scotland, a Scottish island, in fact, and she sort of died under very mysterious circumstances. And the fact that it was sort of so inexplicable, that was where I got this idea for stories that hadn't been sufficiently explained and retained that air of mystery. So it seems sort of an obvious thing to call it now, but when I came up with the idea of Unexplained, it was about a day afterwards that, I'll come up with the name Unexplained, the day after I went into a charity store and I found this sort of big book on a shelf right in front of me, just said Unexplained. And I know that that's quite a, it was quite a well-known magazine series in the 80s, but I'd never heard of it before. So it was quite a kind of moment of like, oh, that's it. I'm doing that.
Fantastic. Now, you don't just kind of sit in front of the microphone and ramble with any old story. I mean, they've got to fulfill some criteria, haven't they?
Yes, that's correct. So they, the main thing is they have to be a story. So often in this kind of culture of the paranormal and supernatural, a lot of people say, oh, you know, I once saw something, or you hear a story about a white lady in a castle, but that's not a story. It's just a kind of moment or an event. So what I look for is things that have, you know, multiple sort of witnesses or multiple occurrences that have been experienced by different people at different times, or, you know, maybe it's one story that's something that's progressed over time. I mean, I did one about a young girl from Madrid, in fact, who who had died under sort of mysterious circumstances. I think she had some kind of psychiatric ailment, and but it actually became sort of shrouded in this strange, mysterious kind of undertone that the parents believed that she had been possessed, and police went to visit her apartment, I think, after she died, and they experienced some very strange things, and it was all written up in an official report, which is kind of perfect for what I'm doing, because any sort of official verification of these strange experiences is, sort of lends a bit of credibility to it, which really helps the story.
And you tell them as if they would have unfolded in real time, don't you?
yeah, that's kind of, that was, I thought was quite key. And I don't know if that, you know, as to how successful the show has been, I don't know if that's because of the way I've done it, that approach, but it was definitely from the storytelling perspective, I felt like that would be a really good way to bring people in. So I tend to take people's accounts at face value, which, you know, some people might say, you know, would dismiss them or judge them. But for me, I feel like the interesting thing is sort of whether you believe it or not, if you might have experienced it in a certain way that you thought was maybe supernatural and it wasn't, but at the moment you don't know. I just try and give the experience of what it might have been like for that to happen. You know, so if you heard a creak in the house or something, and you know, I would tell it as if you're hearing a creak in the house. Right. So it's up to you to decide whether there's something more to that or whether it's just a creaking house.
And I'm fascinated by your own thoughts on the reality of all this, because we're always told when we're growing up, and I think you were told the same thing, you know, that everybody's quite happy to, you know, to pass on because they've had their time and that's the end of it and, yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. But in fact, that's not necessarily the case. And a lot of people die rather scared and are terrified of dying. And that kind of affected you, I think, as a youngster.
It did, yeah, very much so. I don't know where you're getting your information from, but it's very, very well informed. I was always terrified of death from a very early age, and I think I said I had a very vivid sort of nightmare when I was about 7 years old, and I woke up and I realised then that I was a sort of mortal thing, and that one day everything I know and my everything I am will sort of die.
Yeah,
and I also had quite an early experience. Well, not particularly, but when I was a teenager, my granddad had just a heart attack, and he was essentially on his deathbed in hospital. And I went with my dad to sort of watch him and spend sort of, you know, his last few moments with him. And you know, you have this impression as a child that, you know, grandparents will die. You know, if you're lucky enough to know your grandparents and that they had a long and you know, long life and an enjoyable life to a point, that they will die, and it's kind of just the nature of things. And even till quite a late stage, I always felt like, I don't even know if I'd be sad when my grandparents died, because isn't that just what's supposed to happen?
Yes.
So of course, when they did die, it was incredibly sad. And what also sort of struck me when I saw my granddad in this moment was how terrified he was of dying. Like, you know, even at that age, and it seems sort of naive to say it now, but I thought that surely everybody sort of is comfortable with it and has figured everything out. And of course, that's not true.
And interestingly, of course, when you're telling these stories of the paranormal, there must be a bit of you, and there would be for me certainly, and I'm a bit like you. I'd love there to be an afterlife, but of course, we're not going to know till it's a little too late. But I believe you're an atheist, and therefore you've kind of got a bit of a dichotomy there. So do you believe that these stories are about the afterlife in some cases, or how do you square that in your head?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think the thing is, I suppose in many ways with Unexplained, I was always looking for a way to be able to tell or interrogate these stories in some way, not the truth of them, but just be able to kind of enjoy is not necessarily the right word either, because they aren't always sort of fun stories. Well, in fact, most of the time they're not. But it was more about finding a way to sort of justify being able to tell these stories while also holding that idea at the same time that, you know, I am an atheist and I don't believe in the afterlife. But I think it's kind of more this sort of idea of that there's just generally an uncertainty of things. And you know, at the core of it is that I don't think there's an afterlife, but I also can't say that for sure.
Yeah.
And so, but also, I think it's quite funny at the same time to think, well, you know, that those things that we find so extraordinary, that possibly might be so extraordinary, like the idea of having an afterlife or something beyond death that we're kind of consciously experiencing in some way or another, you know, that if that were to be true, it would be very quickly become sort of mundane in itself.
Yeah.
And actually wouldn't be that extraordinary either. And so it's kind of, you know, there's lots of stuff to play with there. And that's the key thing, is that not kind of closing yourself off to ideas because you find them, you know, a little bit maybe silly or naive, that by not closing them off, you actually, I think it can encourage you to think of other things that, you know, might be interesting, or think of, you know, imagine other sort of ideas and stuff like that, which is, you know, I think the imagination and encouraging new ideas is kind of really key to life in a sense.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And so to the book itself, obviously, the book comes out as part of the podcast that kind of inspired it. How did you pick the stories that went in the book then, out of all the ones that you've talked about?
Yeah, I had, most of them actually were kind of stories that I've been saving for the podcast because they were some of my favorite, and I think some of the sort of most some of the ones with the most sort of substance and stuff to talk about. And it was only because I got offered the book opportunity to write the book that you know, part of the deal was that I couldn't have something that'd been on the podcast.
Right.
So then I had to, you know, hold these back. So in a way, it's great that I've been able to finally put them out there because I've been wanting to tell them for a long time since I started the show. And yeah, so they're all quite stories told in depth. The story's about three times as long as they would be on the podcast. Uh-huh. And then there's more. I do kind of, you know, I like to kind of use the stories as a gateway to explore other ideas. So that's a bit more, I think there's more of an academic approach to that in the book than there is in the podcast.
And I know it's a naff interviewer's question, but I need to ask it. Have you got a kind of favourite story that is one that you can maybe regale our listeners briefly with that's particularly interesting?
I've got a sort of personal one because the main question that I get is that, you know, have I experienced anything?
Yeah.
And although I haven't, or I don't think I have, my granddad actually had a sort of very interesting story from when he was a navigator in the Second World War. When his plane got knocked out of the sky, he was in a two-man plane and his pilot bailed out, and he was basically kind of assumed to have died in the crash. And his parents got a telegram that said that much, that he was missing in action, presumed dead. And then a couple of days later, they got another telegram from my granddad saying that actually he was alive and was recovering well. But the interesting thing is that in the time that he was away and presumed dead, his mum went to a psychic and was told that he was actually still alive and that he was being looked after by a deceased elderly relative. So then you can imagine the surprise when they got a telegram 2 days later.
Good
to say actually
grief.
He was alive. But the funny thing was that he also, when he recounted what happened in the plane, at one moment, basically he had taken himself for dead. The plane was spinning in a terrible death spiral. There was no way he was going to escape, and he didn't have his parachute on him. Apparently, in a brief moment, he saw a vision of a woman in the plane that he didn't recognize, an elderly woman. And then the plane stopped spinning. He landed next to his parachute, put it on, and jumped out. And so, you know, independently, that's kind of, you know, you can take that what it is, but when you put the two things together, that's quite an interesting story.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he never thought it was supernatural. He always kind of said it was, you know, he didn't even tell this as part of the story whenever he would, whenever it would kind of get retold, because he thought it was just a moment of the stress, you know, some kind of hallucination.
Yeah. But
it does, you know, again, it's just one of those things that sort of leaves you thinking. And the key thing is that he didn't want people to think that, you know, he'd been saved somehow by some kind of angel. He didn't believe in anything like that.
Right.
So, you know, he wouldn't want anyone to misinterpret what that element of the story was. But I always thought it was interesting that when I was retold that story by my dad on countless occasions, he never mentioned that part of it. It was only later on that I found out that that was something that happened, as well as the mum going to the psychic. So I just thought that was an interesting example of how people can change stories to reflect the world that they'd like to see rather than what the world.
Yeah, has. Absolutely. Really interesting. And just before we go, I must just talk to you briefly as a fellow muso to fellow muso.
Yeah.
I believe that you put music in your podcast as well. So is that your own?
Yes, it is. Yeah. So I do all the music I take a lot of sort of enjoyment doing that because, as you're saying, you know, I'm not really playing music so much now. I don't play live or anything like that. So it's been a good kind of outlet, but also I'm constantly trying to resist sort of using it as a platform to relaunch my musical career. I've done one song in the entirety of the whole thing where I've actually sort of sung something, but the rest is kind of just mood music, which I really love.
And have you resisted the temptation to include the notes do-do-do-do-do-do-do in any of them?
I know, I wonder, yeah, maybe that's an Easter egg I can put in somewhere.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, it's been good to talk to you, sir. Your book, Unexplained, is out, and you can get that from TRE's website, tre.radio. And I guess the podcast will go on, will they?
It will, yep. It's due to start again very soon. I've got a fourth season happening, so I've just got to figure out when the best time is, but it will be in the next couple of months it will start again.
Fantastic. Richard McLean-Smith, pleasure to talk to you, sir. Have a good
Thank
day.
You,
Cheers.
You.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.